This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Before today, children in Massachusetts who are too young to vote, drive, or serve in the military could be sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole, but not anymore. In a ruling today, the Supreme Judicial Court said judges may no longer rule that a minor who comes before them is irretrievably depraved. That's the legal term that once permitted them to sentence the young convicted of a particularly heinous crime to life in prison without the possibility of ever getting out again. Today, the court said such punishment is both cruel and unconstitutional. Last year, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that automatic life sentences without parole for juveniles were unconstitutional. But the Massachusetts High Court went even further than that today. Joining me now is James Allen Fox. He's a professor of criminology, law, and public policy at Northeastern University. And Professor Fox, welcome back to Radio Boston. Good to have you.
Thank you very much.
I'd love it if you could explain to us how this decision goes even beyond what the Supreme Court ruled in 2012 about mandatory life sentences for juveniles.
Sure. Many states, in fact, most states, had the ability to sentence juveniles to life without parole, but it was a discretionary decision, oftentimes involving the judge to decide what was the best and most appropriate punishment. That is, punishment should fit not just the crime, but also the criminal. Massachusetts was one of those states that did not give judges discretion, but made it mandatory. That in Massachusetts, anyone as young as 14 years old who is charged with murder, first-degree murder, is automatically tried as an adult, and if convicted, is automatically sentenced to life without the possibility of parole. Actually, that made Massachusetts the strictest law in the land. What the Supreme Court did in Miller versus Alabama was say that all those states that make it mandatory, that's unconstitutional. There has to be a way for judges and sentencers to make a case-by-case decision. They didn't rule out life without parole. They just said it couldn't be automatic. Massachusetts went the next step and said it's just not appropriate.
Okay, so it's not just automatic. A judge can't do it under any circumstances
in Massachusetts. Correct.
I got it. All right. It's interesting because we think of Massachusetts as a sort of bastion of liberalism, but until this ruling, it was one of only a few places in the world where children as young as 14, as you suggested, could be sentenced to life without parole. How often did this happen? Do we have any idea?
Well, we have right now in Massachusetts over 60 prisoners who are, up to this point, have mandatory life without parole for crimes that were committed before their age of 18. And that's a fairly high number when you compare it to the size of our state and compare it to other states. So we were one of the strictest. This idea that Massachusetts is soft on crime is really a myth, particularly when it comes to sentencing murderers. We are quite strict, but this is much more reasonable, and we're going the same route that many states have gone, which is to recognize that juveniles are different. They're different in terms of their brain development and how they assess consequences. They're different in terms of the fact that they're much more influenced by negative peer influences to do the wrong thing, and they're different from adults in the fact that they can change, they can mature, and a 14-year-old is a very different person 30 years down the road.
And what you're citing right now, sort of brain science, essentially, this is very much what the SJC cited today, right?
Yes, the SJC did cite it, and they've really fallen the lead of the U.S. Supreme Court, which looked at the same evidence. It's not that kids don't know right from wrong. I see online people saying, well, they know right from wrong. Yes, they know right from wrong, but it's appreciating the enormity of that act, the impact that it has on the victim's family, on your family, on yourself. Mm-hmm. Kids tend to act impulsively. We see that in lots of their behavior, willingness to drive 120 miles an hour in a car. They just don't look at consequences the same way that a 25-year-old does.
Right. So this ruling came from the case of Gregory Dychenko. He was 17 in 1981 when he murdered a man in Kenmore Square. He's been in prison for more than three decades. Because of this ruling, he'll be eligible for parole immediately. My question is that because of this ruling, does it mean that it's guaranteed that someone would be eventually be released on parole?
No, there's no guarantee. All this ruling does is say we can't eliminate the possibility of parole. We never guarantee it. In fact, what this ruling does is puts the onus now on the parole board. They will have dozens of prisoners coming forward who've been in prison for decades for crimes that committed before the age of 18. And it's now up to the parole board to decide which of these prisoners, if any, are ready for conditional release on parole.
Now, you mentioned Massachusetts also has a law that requires that children as young as 14 charged with first-degree murder are automatically charged as adults. Does this ruling have any effect on that law?
No. Actually, it's first-degree and second-degree murder.
I see.
Are automatically tried as adults. Now, second-degree murderers get life with parole eligibility after 15 years. And that's why that this is now the sentence, because all those who were on an unconstitutional sentence of life, of mandatory life without parole, the only alternative now is life with parole eligibility after 15 years. And by the way, to point out how this is not a guarantee, there are many prisoners who committed murders before the age of 18, who were convicted of second-degree murder. They've come up for parole, and they've been denied repeatedly. It's no easy path, quick way out of prison. The parole board is oftentimes reluctant to grant parole, particularly in today's post-Sinelli climate, where these kinds of decisions to release murderers are very unpopular. And let me add, I understand from the family and the victims' families, this is almost blindsided. Many of them will say, I was assured that this guy was going to stay in prison forever, and now they've changed it. And that's a very bitter pill for many of them to swallow. And they say, there's no second chance for my child,
right,
the victim. Well, that is true. Unfortunately, there's no second chances. But, you know, there's no second chances for... I mean, we give parole eligibility for second-degree murderers. We give parole eligibility for people convicted of manslaughter, vehicular homicide, and their victims also don't have second chances.
Last question. Does this decision affect any other aspect of the criminal justice system? I mean, I'm thinking, for example, of the whole plea bargaining process. I mean, can you think of other ways that this decision might affect the criminal justice system?
Well, a lot of it depends on what the state legislature does. Now, the state legislature may craft a new law about juvenile murder. That's the future. But in the past, prosecutors have used the threat of life without parole, mandatory life without parole, as a way to get juveniles to plead down to second-degree murder. So that option won't be there.
Very interesting. James Allen Fox, he's a professor of criminology, law, and public policy at Northeastern University. He was talking about today's ruling by the SJC that ends the practice of sentencing juveniles to life in prison without the possibility of parole. James Allen Fox, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
And listeners, stay with us. Coming up, 10 years and 50,000 interviews of StoryCorps. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.